Welcome in, Fight fans. I am Ryan McKinnell, and today on the MMA on SiriusXM podcast, myself and Dean Thomas discuss the planets aligning and the MMA gods shining down on Nate Diaz and the perfect ending to his UFC chapter at UFC 279. And on the flip side, whether Khamzat Chimaev has become the UFC's biggest villain after missing weight for the main event. Nate Diaz victorious after UFC 279 getting the submission over Tony Ferguson in the main event. Dean, I can't believe those words even came out of my mouth. Like, he got the submission victory in the main event of UFC 279 against Tony Ferguson. Like, it still doesn't seem real how this fight card came together. Does that make sense? Man.
It doesn't seem real, but it makes perfect sense. I mean, it really does. Like, in my mind, it makes perfect sense. Like, that's the way MMA should be, because sometimes in MMA, things don't happen the way they should be.
I think maybe
that's why it's surprising to you, because it finally happened the way it should. Like, this is the way it should happen. Yep. Like, that's the way Nate should leave the UFC. It's really the way Tony should leave the UFC as well. But the way Nate left the UFC, and I have to give him his props, because his post-fight speech, well, it wasn't as polished as, you know, you normally expect it to be.
Well, it couldn't be. It's Nate Diaz. He's never polished.
Well, not only that, but just he didn't have any, any one hitter quitters.
Right.
But he said a lot of good things about the UFC and the organization. And he said a lot of good things about what fighters should do. Like, he nailed it, like, about maximizing your potential as a star and your career. Like, he nailed it. And he absolutely hit that on the head. And this weekend was an entire weekend of that, because between him saying what he said and Chris Barnett's post-fight antics, I mean, those guys just absolutely wrote the book on it.
Yeah, no, there were definitely some great post-fight speeches. And that was, you talk about the sort of the unpolished delivery of Nate Diaz, and it absolutely was. He kind of was dancing around it. He's like, I'm going to go to another sport. I'm going to go to another organization, and I'm going to show them how to do it, because Conor McGregor didn't know how to do it. Like, dude, we're talking about Jake Paul. Like, Jake Paul and Anderson Silva are having a press conference here right now. It's going on right now. We're going to play the audio tomorrow on Unlocking the Cage. I'll be back holding it down. Dean, I mean, that is what we were talking about on Saturday, right? Unless Nate knows something we all don't know, which could be a possibility, but I read that as a direct call out to Jake without calling out Jake.
Well, I don't necessarily even know it was like a call out. He was obviously alluding to the Jake Paul situation. And everybody knows that. Like, it didn't need to be said, you know, and Joe Rogan tried to poke at him a little bit and go, you talking about boxing?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu. It didn't need to be said.
Why didn't he come out and say it? Because you brought up a good point. Like, Joe almost like nudged him to get to the point, to talk about what that next plan is. And like, Nate was hesitant for some reason. I can't figure out why.
You know, I think he's a lot smarter than we give him credit for. He may sound like a dumbass at times, but the way he plays his cards and the way he plays the game is probably a lot better and a lot more thought out than we think.
So the idea behind that would be to not announce boxing and Jake Paul in the potential outcome that you don't end up doing it. You use that as leverage to get a bigger contract and come right back to the UFC. I don't understand the logic.
Not necessarily. Maybe, for him to show love to the UFC, maybe, with all that going on, he probably was like, you know what? I'm not going to show Jake Paul any real love right now. I'm not going to give him this rub while the spotlight is on me.
It's fair.
And the first thing Nate said was, I've always had a love-hate relationship with the UFC. He obviously left on a love note.
Yeah.
And the worst thing he could have did on a love note to the UFC was talk about Jake Paul.
That's fair.
So I think that maybe that has something to do with it. And he was very mindful of that too.
He was very mindful of
not talking about Jake Paul.
For a guy who's not historically mindful of the words that come out of his mouth, that was absolutely, like you said, a measured love letter almost to the art of mixed martial arts and the organization of the UFC, to his point that he's had a love-hate relationship with.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but I thought it was brilliant, though. You know, like, I really do think he did a good job of just telling fighters, like, it's more than just getting in there and fighting. It's about having a career. It's about making money. It's about being able to buy a house with this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And No one has done it better than him. No one has had the career and done it better than him based on his ability too. Like when you look at his ability, like it's been remarkable.
His ability and his win-loss record, like that, when it came up on the feed, on the pay-per-view on Saturday night, Dean, like I was reminded once again why I love this sport of mixed martial arts so much, because I don't know if there's another sport, another form of entertainment where you can take a fighter who's lost 13 times, 21 or 20 and 13 heading into that fight to where he's in the main event. Not only is he in a main event, but he's heralded. He's one of the most popular fighters in the sport. He's one of the money makers in the sport. I love that fact that you can have that parity. And this, it's almost like the perfect blend of professional wrestling and boxing, in the sense that, like, in professional wrestling, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time was Ric Flair. Dean, Ric Flair lost all the time. That's essentially what he did, is he went out and lost, but it didn't affect his drawing power. It didn't affect his character, so much so that he still has rap songs named after him today, and we still talk about Ric Flair. That's Nate Diaz. He's, in a way, the Ric Flair of mixed martial arts.
Well, because I think that people don't like their stars to be perfect.
Yeah.
They don't want to look up to somebody who's perfect. They want to look up to somebody who is a fuck up just like them. Like, I wake up every day and I mess things up all the time. And I want my heroes to mess up all the time, just like Nate. And I want my heroes to not care, just like Nate, because that gives me permission to not care, just like Nate. So when I mess up, I can throw my middle finger up at the world too, just like Nate does. And that's the reason why he's able to be relatable, because he messes up, he's not perfect, and he doesn't care. And that gives other people permission to not be perfect and not care.
Dean, I am here for whatever is next in the career of Nate Diaz. I'm a little surprised. I guess like a week ago, if you would have asked me about the possibility of a UFC return in the immediate future, I would have said no way, because the bag is just so large in the Carney sort of lane of celebrity boxing, whatever the hell you want to call it, right? But that was prior to Nate Diaz getting matched up with Tony Ferguson and walking away out of the UFC with a victory, a submission victory, flexing on him in, you know, typical classic Nate Diaz sort of optics. It was just a sort of wild turn of events. So again, a week ago, I would have said no chance he instantly returns to the UFC. Now, I don't know, Dean, like Nate's got some serious bargaining power here. And depending, I don't know, listen, like I said, Anderson Silva and Jake Paul are having a press conference right now. If that fight goes a different way, like let's say, or if that fight goes the way of Anderson Silva, I should say, right? And Anderson Silva absolutely demolishes Jake Paul, that's got to play in the favor of Dana White and the UFC on the possibility of Nate immediately returning to the UFC, no?
It depends. I think that the Nate Diaz fight could happen either way.
It right? could.
Like, no matter what. But you know what I think? I think that that moment that Nate had, it felt good for us, right? And 100%. For as shitty as Nate can be sometimes, and as, you know, as FU as Nate can be, I think that moment felt really good for him. And people don't understand how good that moment feels when you get your hand raised inside of a cage. When you make another man submit, it feels really good. So when he's in there talking, he's talking from that feeling of feeling good. And that's why he was saying, yo, I'm going to come back. It's possible that he could come back because of that feeling, and that feeling, you can't recreate it nowhere else. And yeah, that's the feeling that all these fighters chase. And when they retire, they want to get back to that feeling. And I think that's the reason why Nate wants to come back, is because of that feeling.
Yeah, well, I understand that. And he might have been feeling, as we talk about feelings, right, he'd be feeling a lot different in terms of that excitement of wanting to come back to the UFC if it was Khamzat Chimaev that he was facing at UFC 279 instead of Tony Ferguson.
No, if that fight had happened,
yeah,
and Nate, let's say Nate even survived the fight, lost a decision, Nate would have been like, fuck y'all, middle fingers, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't get that feeling, you know? In fact, it would have been worse, because they would have been like, they put this man in here to beat me so that I could feel bad about myself.
Yep. Yep. Well said. Well, you know, as we talk about a potential, I don't know, the potential future, I should say, of Nate Diaz, whether it lies in boxing and Jake Paul, or whether it might be a return to the UFC, I can't help but think, man, this really was a storybook finish. Like, let's say this was Nate's final fight in his UFC career. I don't know if I could write a better finish. Like, I prior to this, like, my favorite retirement from mixed martial arts is a man you know very well, Dean, and that's Chris Lytle. Chris Lytle in 2011 going out there and subbing Dan Hardy again with another guillotine choke, very similar to what Nate did to Tony on Saturday night, the identical finish. Chris Lytle going out on top against a guy like Dan Hardy, and Dan Hardy, like, the year prior had just fought George St. Pierre for the welterweight title. Lytle goes out, finishes him, and then he says goodbye from mixed martial arts forever. That's one of my favorite retirements in the history of the sport. If Nate were to walk away after Saturday, that would be right up there, especially with the classic signature flex. It was storybook, man.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that. And I always use the Chris Lytle analogy as well, because it doesn't, I mean, when you think it can't get any better than that because of so many ways your retirement fight could go wrong, it never goes right for anybody. It's oftentimes too late, you know. It's, but the way Chris went out, you got to give him his props for that. But if Nate goes out this way, I mean, to defy the odds in so many different ways,
The fact we even got here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have made this happen is remarkable.
It really
and
is.
This would go down as the greatest retirement ever. So, I mean, to be like, from me, I'm not one of them guys who like some guys come back. I like when they retire and lead a good life and be happy and get fat. I like that.
Yeah.
So if he were to retire now, I'd be really happy. I want to party with him. So, like, I want him to retire on these terms, because I hate to see guys go out like Chuck Liddell going out just three fights too late, you know, getting hit, getting stopped. Like, the worst. So if we talk about the best retirement ever right now is Nate Diaz. The worst is probably Bigfoot Silva. I mean, he's still getting knocked out.
He's still fighting.
He might be somewhere knocked out right now. His head's hanging over a ring rope, like.
It's messed up, but it's, you know, it's funny because it's true. Like, I mean, it is really sad where we find Bigfoot Silva, but to the point of just combat sport in general, you brought up a Chuck Liddell, bro. The saddest thing I've ever seen in combat sports, legit, is Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz 3. The one from a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That was.
Yeah. Ooh. Ugh. I mean, it's terrible.
Even now, like, it makes my skin crawl. This is the opposite of that. Yeah.
It's terrible to watch these guys come back and do that. Like, why can't we just come back and play cornhole? You know what I'm saying?
I don't think cornhole. I don't think that cornhole sells pay-per-views like you think it should.
Well, we don't have to sell. Just listen. I saw BJ Penn at the fight Saturday night. And, yeah, BJ Penn was there. And he, you know, did his parade through the crowd. Got much love. And I embraced BJ with the hug that you would give a long lost brother.
Yeah.
Because that's the relationship we got. And it was lovely. But we don't have to go out and fight. You know what I'm saying? We don't have to go out and fight. We just embrace each other with love. And that's what fighters need to do when it's over. Just embrace each other with love. You don't have to come back and fight. That's
right. Respect the history. I like that. And Nate certainly put on a historical performance, at least from the standpoint of one of the most popular draws, one of the most popular fighters, one of the most popular characters to ever step foot in a ring, octagon, cage, whatever you want to call it. Nate Diaz going out flexing with a submission over one of the best of his generation as well in Tony Ferguson. It really was a storybook ending, at least for this portion of Nate Diaz's career.
Busted Open is your daily home for all things pro wrestling. Join Dave LaGreca, WWE Hall of Famers Bully Ray and Mark Henry, and hardcore wrestling legend Tommy Dreamer.
Dave LaGreca here. From WWE to AEW, Impact, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and more, we talk it all. Whether you grew up watching Ric Flair or Stone Cold Steve Austin, Busted Open is your place for pro wrestling.
Busted Open, Mondays through Saturdays at 9 a.m. East on Fight Nation, Sirius XM Channel 156.
I don't know what Hamzat Chimaev was saying, all of it, Dean Thomas, but he was very upset. He was very impassioned. And it's not a man I want to upset. So I'm just going to say I'm the president of the Hamzat Chimaev fan club. He can do nothing wrong. Go Hamzat. Yay, yay, yay. And I'll pass it to you, Dean. Any critiques and criticisms will fall on your head for the next hour.
Well, I tell you, like, I couldn't hear what he said to Joe Rogan afterwards. That was the first time I actually heard what he said. Because
could you still decipher what he said? Because it was
I can hear. He said, I don't care about that, and I could decipher it a little bit. But in the arena, you know, it's too loud. It's harder. It's kind of muffled sounding. So I never really heard what he said, but I mean, it's just a lack of discipline and a lack of care. I mean, and I've seen these guys in the gym year after year, over and over. And it's very difficult for these guys to stay on track for a long time, because the best fighters in the gym aren't the ones who you end up, or the best fighters in the world aren't the ones who end up in the UFC. They're the dudes that can't stay out of trouble, right? The dudes that keep doing dumb shit and getting in trouble. And Khamzat reminds me of that, but he likes fighting so much that he's just still able to go out there and do it. But so I'm in the hotel with him, and he was giving a little kid an autograph, and I said, damn, I hope he ain't remember something I said. And I made sure I snuck behind him before he got a chance to turn around.
Do the old Bugs Bunny, where you like,
and then he turned and looked, and then I hid behind the lamppost. Zoop. And then he turned around. I kept going. Yeah, I didn't want him to see me. Listen, it's dangerous out there for an analyst.
Tell me more. Because Dean, I don't ever have to see my adoring public, right? Like, I get to say wild shit, and I kind of just get to stay in the way. I'm not always, the only time you'll see me in a fight, and I didn't go this weekend. I think the last fight I covered, boots on the ground, was McGregor and Poirier. I've been kind of laying low since COVID. I am going to get back in the swing of things. But yeah, you gotta see everybody. I mean, pre-fighter meetings, post-show stuff, in between, on the ground. It's dangerous out there for you, Black Harlow.
And every last one of them reminds me. Jamie Pickett, I saw him in the hotel. He was like, man, you said I was going to lose last time. You said, man, I was going to lose. I'm like, man, I didn't say that. He said, yes, you did. And I was like, all right, I did.
Here's also the thing. We never remember. Like a lot of the time when picks and predictions come around, like, I mean, I say it, but I don't remember I said it.
I don't remember half the time. And I'm always just like, man, that's why sometimes, like, when I make a prediction, I just hope it happens just so they don't have to come back to me. That's the only reason. Like, right. I just so they don't have to come back to me. So now, you know, if Jamie Pickett comes back at me, I'm like, you did lose this time. So I thought you were going to win. You were going to win, Jamie.
Or in the case of Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, when you're out there saying Leon Edwards looks like a defeated man and he's broken, and then he goes out and gets it. I mean, you weren't wrong. You had the video to back it up. You had the in-between rounds conversation to back it up. It's just, yeah, they don't want to hear the truth sometimes, D.
And as much as I'm glad and I'm happy for him that he did do that, I got a good relationship with Leon. We message each other all the time. I have a great relationship with him. And as much as I'm happy to see that happen, it sucked. I hate that it happened just because it made me look wrong. Right?
Damn you, Leon Edwards. How dare you make Black Harlow look?
How dare you make me look stupid?
Well, I'm glad you survived the hotel lobby run-in with Khamzat Chimaev. Let it just be a lesson to you, though, right? Like, never say anything bad about Khamzat Chimaev. Or in this case, let's say everything bad about Khamzat Chimaev, because, yo, this dude missed weight by 8+ pounds, got on the scale, turned his hands up to the sky and was like, eh, whatever. Then in the post fight, he's like, I don't give a shit. I'll beat anybody. Fuck weight. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but he really doubled down on not caring about throwing this whole card into an absolute shitstorm of chaos, and then leaned into it, and then, you know, kind of sort of absorbed the booze. Are we looking at one of the best villains right now in the UFC?
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I don't know him on a personal level, but I get the impression. So it's hard to really analyze and make a judgment on him based on that, because when he stepped on the scale, he obviously had that smug look and he was kind of like he didn't care. But that's what you do sometimes when you're embarrassed, right?
Okay, like, well, what about after the fight when he just, you know, waxed the canvas, you know, and did what he did against Holland?
But I think all that stuff leading up to it, the fact that,
okay,
so I think he was embarrassed at first, and then he just embraced the hate and used it as fuel to be like, you know what? It sucks, but I just got to go with it now, because this is where I'm at. And that's what I think, because I think he was really like, because they said he got down to like 173 or 174. And then they told him to stop cutting and he drank. And that's why he came in at 178.
Yeah.
So he got down. But the doctors told him to stop.
Do you believe that, man? We just watched Aspen Ladd almost get carried out on a stretcher within the last year. I mean, we've seen fighters go up there on the verge of death and be passing out on the scale, but Khamzat at 8 pounds, the doctors were like, no, Mr. Chechenin, you got to take it easy.
So what happens is they give you a number. So like all the fighters, they have access to the doctor if you need it.
Okay.
If things are not going right for you during your weight cut, you can reach out to the UFC's doctors and they'll come look at you.
Okay.
So in Aspen Ladd's case, she probably didn't do that, which is why like some people don't do it. Then they show up to the scale and they look worse than others.
Okay.
Clearly, Khamzat and them reached out to the doctors and the doctors probably looked at him and was like, all right. And apparently that's the story that they said that, you know, the doctors looked at him. They called the doctor, looked at him, and he was like, you got to stop cutting. He got down to like 173, 174 and told him to drink and he needed to rehydrate. So that's the reason why that happened. Do I buy it? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
But we weren't there. We can only wonder, but you gotta think, man. Like,
I don't know how bad he looked. You know, I don't know how, because he probably was at 173. Like, I don't want to do no more. Call a doctor. Hurry up. You know, like that could have been him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's also, he also has to feel like, I mean, he's got the UFC by the ringer essentially at that point, because he is the main event. He is the A side. He is what everyone's talking about. He's going to dog walk Nate Diaz. This is going to be his coming out party. The UFC was setting him up against Nate Diaz to make him look better. Like, we all knew it, so he knew it. Do you think there's just, sure, like, an element that he was just feeling himself and he just thought he was bulletproof?
No, for sure he knew it, and for sure he's embarrassed by that because he knew he messed up a layup. So his way of dealing with that is to go the opposite direction and just be like, I don't care about all that stuff. I'm just here to smash people. Smash, smash, smash. Because I think he's truly embarrassed that they really gave him an alley-oop for the ages.
They did.
They lobbed up a softball for him, and he really blew it.
And really, let's dive into that, right? Because Nate Diaz, a part of a couple of the biggest pay-per-views in the history of mixed martial arts against Conor McGregor, right? Then a 15-year veteran, then of the UFC, then Nick Diaz's brother, and he's got the 209 rub, right? He's like this, you know, this anti-hero, you know, sort of, you know, X-Man, if you will, right? Like, beloved by so many people, this counterculture icon. He's been building this brand for years and years and years and years and years. And the UFC set you up, Khamzat Chimaev, to siphon off that brand, right? Like, there's a lot of, they'll do that. They did it with Anderson Silva, right? Like, they'll do that with fighters. That has happened before. If you're on your way out and you're sticking around, you're not going to get any easy fights in the UFC to begin with. That goes double if you're a legend and you're walking away, because they want to put that juice on the next generation. Khamzat was being set up in a way that few fighters have ever been set up before, because Dean, there haven't been many fighters like Nate Diaz.
Right, exactly. You know, and there's been no one like Nate Diaz.
Not really. If Nate Diaz is in that main event, he is getting absolutely washed. And that is not an indictment on anything. It's just the way fighting is and how dominant Khamzat Chimaev is. Like, we know the deal.
Yeah. So he was getting set up in a way that no one else was, and he blew that.
Yeah,
like that's got to be, and he knew he blew it. So he had to, his way of dealing with it wasn't to be apologetic; it was to just turn full heel.
Now, winning does cure. I'm not gonna say it cures all, but it does make people forget. Khamzat Chimaev worked Kevin Holland. He was gonna work just about anybody that he got to the octagon with. And honestly, Dean, I think he's got a great chance against anybody else at 170. The question will be, is he going to be fighting at 170 going forward? We can dissect that as the show goes on and as the week goes on. But Dean, just from this standpoint of doing the UFC dirty, of going up on the scale and throwing his palms up and giving that sly grin that a lot of people didn't like after the fight, he said a lot of stuff that people didn't like. He was getting huge boos. That can be a good thing, right? You need heels in this business. You need the foil. You need a Chael Sonnen to an Anderson Silva to draw that little bit of extra oomph. My question to you, Dean Thomas, you know Dana White, you are a pioneer in this sport. You have been on both sides of the aisle. How long is Khamzat Chimaev going to be paying for Saturday night and the chaos that he caused? Because it was him that caused this chaos.
It depends. It depends on how his next fight is booked. Now, if they go, Hamzat, Colby said he wants to fight you. We need you to fight him in New York, Madison Square Garden, November. Hamzat has to say yes. And if he says yes, all is forgiven. Now, if they say, all right, Hamzat, you know, we need you to fight.
He tries to play hardball.
Yeah, he starts playing hardball and negotiating.
Right.
It's going to be a problem. You know, that's the thing with the UFC. They have UFC has a short memory as well. They're very forgiving. They're very forgiving because they would rather things work out and work smoothly.
How many chances did they give John Jones?
Exactly. And yeah. they still giving him chances because they would just rather things work out and be smooth as opposed to having to fight with guys all the time. And that's the real thing with like managers. And that's the thing with, oh, you're a company man. It's not that the fighters or certain people are company men. It's just, man, they just cooperate with each other. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I cooperate with you guys to hear it serious. I cooperate with the UFC. I cooperate with people in life. Life is just easier when you cooperate.
You're an affable fellow.
Yeah. I just don't like to be against stuff for no reason, just for the sake of being against it.
Right.
I cooperate.
Unlike our pal RJ Clifford, or as you called him on the post-fight show, the great RJ Clifford.
Yeah,
you can't be saying that shit, man. You can't be elevating his head. You can't get him, you know, you can't get him pumped up. That's RJ.
Well, I had to, man. I think RJ's brilliant and he doesn't get a lot of love half the time.
Oh no, this is all
really.
Bad.
I think RJ's a good dude. He don't get a lot of love half the time. Every chance I could get to show him some love publicly, I do, man, because he takes. And he'll never ask for nothing. He take it for the team, so I can give him his love.
That is true. That is true. I give RJ Clifford a hard time pretty much all the time, but he is one of my oldest friends and one of my longest running also side enemies as well. But he is, you're right. He does take a lot and he never asks for anything in return. So I'll give that to you, Dean. Salute to RJ Clifford. And yeah, RJ had he had plenty on his table over the weekend, pivoting and writing for TV and doing all the drama and everything that had to come from UFC 279 end event. I didn't envy any of y'all on Saturday, Dean. All right, so let me ask you this. You brought up the name Colby Covington. A lot of people wondering what a Colby Covington, Hamzat Chimaev fight might look like. I love the booking from the standpoint that they're like, two of the biggest heels right now in mixed martial arts, like the idea of those two getting on a microphone and chopping it up, and Lord knows what type of just absolutely boneheaded stupidity would be coming out of Colby Covington's mouth in a matchup against the Chechen in Hamzat Chimaev. Like, I don't know what the fight would look like, but I do kind of know what the lead up to the fight would look like, and it would be drama and chaos. And Dean, I'm here for that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be very dangerous. I mean, we're as dangerous waters that we'd be playing on if those two fought. But I love the matchup. But I think about it. Like, you talk about the two villains. I mean, it's the Joker versus the Penguin. It's perfect. I mean, I would love to see them fight. I don't know if they could ever make it because there's a lot involved. And, you know, I'm sure Chimaev would do it in a heartbeat.
I would say, if you're Colby Covington, with all the equity you've built up and the big fights you've had and the rivalries you've had with Kamaru, would you take that fight?
No, I can't imagine him taking that fight because of, like you said, the foundation that he's built to put him in that position. And to fight a guy like Chimaev, you have to be a guy like Bilal Muhammad or Sean Brady, a hungry, young, up-and-coming, athletic, but yet still skilled. Like, you have to be in your prime. You know what I'm saying?
You also got a little kooky.
Yeah. But like, but Colby, like, I don't know if Colby's in that place in his career right now where he would have that hunger to be able to go out and, you know, and want to fight a guy like Chimaev. Like, you can't just fight Chimaev for the money.
Right.
Or because you are put in a position where you have to say yes. You have to want that guy.
Yeah.
You have to want that fight.
Yeah. We got to be able to. Gotta be a little loose in the head too.
Yeah,
not have everything up there working.
If you don't want that fight, then you shouldn't take it.
Yeah. Well said. And to your point, it seems like a much more logical sort of situation and scenario for someone who's coming up, someone who's hungry, and someone who's got a lot to prove. Love him or hate him, Colby Covington doesn't have much to prove in this sport, Dean.
No, I mean, he doesn't. Like, he's already done a lot. He was an interim champion. I mean, he's made a lot of money. He's done a lot of things. He was one of the most popular fighters on the planet at one time. So, I mean, he's really done enough if he wanted to bow out now and, you know, and ride away. But I don't think we've seen the last of him. I think he's taking time off to kind of let the dust settle a little bit, kind of clear his name a little bit. So when he comes back, he can come back with a cleaner slate, not a clean slate, but a cleaner slate, to where people forgot about some of his transgressions. People forgot that he got beat up outside the steakhouse. So I think he'll come back. He'll come back and talk some trash. Sorry, my mic stand fell, y'all.
It's all good. You got them quick reflexes, man. That's why you are De Niro. That's why you are the pioneer that you are, Dean Thomas.
MMA on SiriusXM is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Plus, catch Unlocking the Cage weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern and MMA Today Tuesday to Thursday from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156 and on the SXM app.
SiriusXM Podcasts.